other people are they already gone. Oh, they are not staying. Oh, okay. CFO must come closer then. Come closer this way. Right, I think we won't waste time. Is the DG also gone? He's coming back. Oh, you will lead the discussion, okay. 67 million. Okay, I think you can go ahead. They'll find us on the way, those who are not here now.
Thanks. The DG did say I should introduce. Thanks, Chairperson. Godfrey will do a presentation on the 2009-10 report on the R&D tax incentive program. I think copies of the full report were circulated to people. We've got some feedbacks on information that could be better presented, and we're taking those things into account and how to improve the report for and to ensure that it's a value-adding document to Parliament in terms of its oversight role. But I'll ask Godfrey to go through the presentation, and then we can take comments both on the presentation, and I hope that people have received copies of the full report. Yeah, that's all. Thanks. Godfrey Mashamba is responsible for our science and technology investment portfolio, and this is an area of work under his program.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members, DSG colleagues. Yes, I will present on the briefing on 2009-10 report on the R&D tax incentive program. The presentation summarizes, like Imran has said, the contents of the report that has already went to Cabinet. It has been finalized. It contains the background, an introduction, an uptake of the R&D tax incentives by companies, and some assessment of the impact of the program, and our analysis of challenges and the steps going forward. In terms of the background, in November 2006...
Can you find a way to move the micro next to you, because it's a little bit faint. Yeah.
I'll control.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. In November 2006, an improved R&D tax incentives was introduced through the Section 11D of the Income Tax Act. It comprised 150% of deductions on current expenditure that's eligible in terms of this section. It was an improvement from a previous dispensation which only provided 100% deduction. This improvement also included an accelerated depreciation on R&D assets over a period of 3 years at the rate of 50, 30, 20, as opposed to the previous one, which was done over a period of 4 years. The program has a key role to encourage higher private sector investment in R&D. The committee would appreciate the challenges that were noted in the National Research and Development Strategy of 2002, that measures needed to be introduced to encourage higher private sector investment in R&D, because at the time, a private sector investment was declining. We manage the program at the DST in conjunction with the South African Revenue Services. We work closely with the National Treasury and the Department of Trade and Industry to make it work. So the minister is required by the Income Tax Act, to report annually to Parliament on the direct impact of the incentive program in terms of the aggregate of the R&D expenditure that is supported through this program, to also report on the tax revenue foregone, that is the tax expenditure, as a result of this program, and the direct effects of to economic growth, employment, and other broader government objectives that are achieved through this program. So for companies to be eligible, they must have activities that constitute scientific and technological R&D. They must have spent money on those. Those activities must be undertaken within South Africa, and the R&D that's being undertaken must be for the purposes of deriving income. So the way the program works is that companies apply retrospectively. They claim this tax incentive retrospectively. That is, they spend first and then they apply. They claim to, they send a form to SARS and another form to DST reporting. So the data that we get here gets revised as claims for previous years are received. You would see that in the new report that we are preparing now for 20, that we are processing now for 2010-11, some of the data that we presented here would have been revised because we are still receiving forms that pertain to claims of 2008 and 2009, so we allocate those amounts in those years as it applies to the years. That's how we arrange with the South African Revenue Services. So the first report, which was 2007-08, covered the period from November 2006 to September 2008, and it only contained 80 forms. The reason why we didn't have an annual report in 2006 because there were no applications at the time. So in September 2008, we took a stock of everything that happened since the inception of the program in November 2006. And then this report that I'm presenting here today attempts to reconcile the information for the first 4 years of the program, because there was some data that we've collected at the time. And then it tried to clarify things a bit in terms of the data and allocation by years, also taking into account the whole background work that we have been doing with the South African Revenue Services to clean up the data and produce better information or better estimates of the tax revenue foregone that the Minister of Finance reported during the budget speech this year. So the 2010-11 report is being processed at the TST. In summary, the uptake of companies by companies is as follows. By February 2009-10, there was a total of 412 forms that we have received. We acknowledge that some of these forms are submitted, are repeat applications that are submitted by companies. So we are not talking about 412 companies. We are talking about a lesser number because some companies could have submitted twice or there was 133 repeat applications that were for the second time and about 41 that were for the third time at that time. The total R&D expenditure was 6.3 billion, and the eligible component of that R&D was 4.6 billion in total. So we see that the number of forms peaked at 165 in 2008, but the new data will give us a new peak because we've added data going back for those years. In terms of the size range of companies using the annual turnover, we find that about 80% of the R&D expenditure comes from 38% of the companies, and those companies are companies that have annual turnover of 100 million and above. We do see another set of many companies paying 10 million and below. About 25% of all the companies, all the forms that we have processed, were were of the turnover of annual turnover of 10 million and below. The tax expenditure foregone that was presented in the National Treasury Budget Review in February this year is as follows. It indicates that a total of 1 billion rand has been foregone for the period 2005-2009. But this data, we are fully aware, it contains a deduction for the program that was there before. So it was not as clean. It's the best information that we could have gotten at that time while the work of a cleaning up data and making sure that they record it properly in the future is implemented. But the work that SARS was doing in this area is far wider than this. This is only a small component of the tax-based incentives that government administers through SARS. So there is a whole host of other DTI managed tax incentive programs from which which they were busy doing, standing up in the same project as this. So there's a whole lot of interesting work that they are doing, which we have supported fully with the Treasury involved as well. Key observations of the early impact. We say early impact because at the time, the program was 4 years in operation, and companies that have benefited from it, we couldn't really expect them to have gotten a benefit other than having done the project, having seen the early results of their project. So we couldn't really talk about impact a lot there, but the signals that we get in terms of how the program is changing the operation of R&D in the private sector is that the number of forms submitted by companies has increased on a quarterly basis for the first 3 years of the program. Inquiries have also increased substantially during the year 2009-10 as more companies have become aware of the program. About 51% of participating companies are from the manufacturing sector, which accounts for 57% of the eligible R&D expenditure. And of the R&D expenditure reported, 61% of it is R&D expenditure within the sectors prioritized in terms of the National Industrial Policy Action Plan. And the fact that the top five fields of R&D expenditure that's reported, most of it is in chemical sciences, followed by industrial sciences, metallurgy, mathematical, and then physical sciences. And then the count of R&D personnel involved in the R&D activities reported was 13.7 thousand. This comprises scientists, engineers, technologists, technicians, managers, and other employees that are directly involved in R&D. And that we also note an incremental employment of R&D personnel in companies that are regular R&D performers. So we noted the rates varying from about one employee to 49 employees, but this was very small. Like I said, very small sample to make big conclusions on. We are currently analyzing for the next report the incremental R&D and incremental employment of R&D personnel, R&D expenditure and the incremental employment of R&D personnel. So the picture is becoming much more clearer in terms of how we see companies responding to the program. In terms of the challenges, we observe that the uptake is slower than what we expected. However, the overall response that we see from companies, there's so much interest in companies because they are aware of this program, especially the big companies, those that do R&D. They are aware of the program, and they think it's a good thing that the South African government has this type of incentive. when we check with what's happening in other countries, we find that South Africa, in terms of this incentive particularly, it's one of the competitive or most generous programs that are on offer out there. So we shouldn't feel bad about it. It's a good proposition that we have in place to attract investment. But again, there are wider challenges that concern companies' decision-making when it comes to R&D. The past 2 years or so has been very difficult for many companies, and we are aware of decision processing companies that some would have chosen to relocate their investment to elsewhere, some would have relocated, would have chosen to postpone their investment in R&D, and some would have downsized or cut R&D altogether, because in some cases you find that R&D is not the core driver of operations. They have to focus on the survival. But again, it's about how you create awareness about the importance of R&D and how businesses see it from their point of view. Whether the program is attracting a investment by multinationals, that is still yet to be determined. We haven't really done that kind of assessment of how it's performing in terms of the multinationals. But again, there is a wider set of factors that companies consider when they are evaluating investment location for R&D. Part of it, which is beyond the power of this incentive, it's things that get influenced by many other things that happen in the whatever this environment in which they operate. The other challenge, uncertainty by companies with respect to whether approval is granted or the eligibility of their R&D. That's what we have been experiencing in the past 2 years or so, that companies were raising this as an issue, that they send this claim to SARS, but they're never sure whether their claim will be accepted or not. We have put measures in place to respond to this. The challenges of SMEs funding their R&D, the problems of access to funding, and problems of especially internal funding, whether they have resources to fund R&D initiatives or whether they are able to attract external funding to support their R&D, is a challenge for SMEs. They also face, some of the SMEs that we interface with, they indicate a problem of human resources, that sometimes they can't afford certain types of skills to do R&D, so we encourage them to work with the science councils. There was one particular event that I participated in with the MINTEC, where we were exploring ways of how MINTEC can work with a smaller enterprises in that area of their work, to support them in their R&D, and they've shown very keen interest in doing that, and they suggested that we can actually do that with other science councils that are working closer to business as such. The administrative process between DST and SARS, that is one of the issues that we are dealing with currently, to make sure that it's clear to the businesses that a criteria, processes, timelines, those things are clear to the businesses. And then in terms of the actions relating to the few challenges that I've highlighted, the report proposes that we should review, we should propose amendments to the Section 11D, and which I'm reporting now that there was a process underway that has been undertaken with the National Treasury to draft amendments to deal with issues of uncertainty with respect to approval or eligibility, things of streamlining roles of the SARS and DST as regards process of applying and approval, and ways in which we can improve information management so that we do better impact monitoring. So on this part, we will await the pronouncement by the National Treasury, the Minister of Finance, when they announce the tax law amendments, if the proposed amendments that we've put in place will be accepted or not. There are measures that we have been undertaking to intensify awareness, because we acknowledge that even if we say that there is awareness amongst companies, we need to do more. Smaller size enterprises, for instance, many of them, we think that they are still not aware of the existence of the program. Not only the existence of the program, but the assistance in terms of how do they participate in the program. The forms, the criteria, the processes, and all those kind of things. That we've tried to use simple language in the program brochures. We have also engaged with industrial associations and targeted workshops. And we have actually targeted large R&D performers that are known to talk to them about this. And they find it a very good proposition, the R&D tax incentive. You find that companies do what they call R&D out there, but whatever they understand as R&D in their context as matched with what the criteria accepts as eligible R&D, it's something that we have to work with companies from time to time. We also collaborate with the Department of Trade and Industry in terms of promoting industrial support programs when they do their interface with companies. We usually there with the trade and investment TISA. We have also encouraged them to incorporate the tax, this R&D tax incentives availability when they engage foreign investors, for instance, in their brochures. And then we need to work continually with TIA. We are still engaging with them as to what the modalities will be in terms of promoting the awareness of this program. And lastly, we undertook a feasibility or need analysis in the course of last year and this year. This is one of the recommendations that we provide in the report, that having observed the challenge of SMEs that they've highlighted, we need to respond to it. So this is how we responded. We did a feasibility analysis to determine if a targeted program to support R&D in SMEs should be introduced, and we are in the process of making recommendations through internal structures of the department. I'm sure if this is accepted internally, it will be shared with the committee in due course. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I think I'll allow the members to interact with you and review what they think about it. I have Honorable Smith Sheen in that order.
So you going first. All right, Chair. Thank you very much. Thanks for the presentation. I think this report is really necessary. I mean, it's overdue in a sense, because we're all concerned about the efficacy of the regime, the incentive regime, and whether it's working. So it's good to have some hard data in front of us. I got some questions. Maybe some of them are pretty. Maybe it's my lack of understanding, but. Your first slide, of course, you talk about the actual incentive itself. Now, it's fine. It's 150% operational costs. How do you distinguish, because you guys administer the scheme, eh? How do you distinguish between, for example, operational costs which are apportioned to R&D versus a company that might wish to apportion other operational costs towards R&D. I should think it's a very, because they would obviously have an incentive to push as much of the operational costs towards the R&D incentive as they can, because they get rewarded. Now, who makes, how do you evaluate all that? It must be a very complex, even a technical issue at times, to say, actually, that expenditure is operational other, not operational R&D. How do you handle that? Then you talk about also that to be eligible, it has to be for deriving income, for the purpose of deriving income. Now, you would think that expenditure for the purpose of deriving income would have to be applied stuff, basically. But I see that on page 16, you, for example, 2.8% deals with basic research issues. Now, basic research, to me, doesn't appear to be linked directly to the purpose of deriving income, unless you have a pretty long time frame. Yeah, but then you could say all basic research somewhere has a profit motive in the end. I'm just wondering how you read the applied research. See, the other apportionments, the new product development and product improvement, I understand 100%. But when you talk about applied research and particularly basic research, I'm not quite sure how it links up with the obligation that it must be for the purpose of deriving income. Then it's quite striking if you look at the tables that 2009 was a crunch year. Now, basically, as I seem to be hearing it, you're saying that business went through a tough time, and that's why all the figures are down, because the trend has been up until then. Well, that's what I thought you were saying. Okay, so the way I see it is that in 2009, all your data suddenly veers belly up, and so from a very sharp growth trajectory, a reasonably strong growth trajectory, it halves in respect of the percentage of funds for the R&D expenditure. So something happened in 2009. I would have thought it's the bad economy, and if so, I was just going to ask whether you have any indication of whether, currently, it's maintaining the same pattern in the current year, or what's happening? Are we going to wait until the economy recovers before we get an increased uptake? I'm not sure. And while I'm on that subject, sorry, it's just a strange thing. It's just terminology. I do find it fascinating that you use the word forms. I mean, I would have thought you'd talk about applications or something, but the number of forms submitted sounds like a clerical approach to something. I mean, you have an application by a company for an incentive. You don't have a form, which is a marker of an indicator of something. You have an application. But anyway, that's just neither here nor there. You speak about the, in one of the slides, about the 80% comes from the companies with high turnover, and later about the need to get more involvement of smaller companies. I mean, how big a challenge is this? I would have thought that the smaller companies would have a big incentive, because they're often squeezed, they've got tight margins and so on. I would have thought if they knew about the program, there would be more likelihood of a take-up there that perhaps than some of the larger companies, and yet it's the reverse. I'm just wondering whether the smaller companies have different challenges in their grasping, or whether the fund in fact works for smaller companies, or is it the challenge lies in the smaller companies unable to use it? What's the reason for that failure there? And then almost done. I was quite struck by this one, that the fields of R&D expenditure in this order. I find this very weird. Okay, chemical sciences, fine, makes sense. I presume that includes pharmaceuticals and things like that, I don't know. Industrial sciences, fine. Metallurgical sciences, fine. But then mathematical sciences. 13%, 12% goes to mathematical sciences, and a further 10% physical sciences. What on earth does that mean? I mean, what company involved in R&D... Yeah, but that's a mathematical science. I find it very weird. I would have thought agriculture, for example. I can see agriculture, aquaculture. I can see a lot of things where people would have R&D needs. What mathematical science, other than the creation of algorithms for technology communications, would represent 12% R&D? Quite strange to me. And then lastly. How active are you guys in marketing this? I know you make it one of your challenges as well, and you need to simplify your brochures, et cetera, but is your marketing adequate for the challenges ahead? Thanks.
Thank you. I've already had part of this conversation with Mr. Patel, because I found this report quite complicated to actually even understand the progress of this program. simply because there was confusing terms. And Peter here now talks about forms. Now, I don't know whether there are more companies. Let me take it back. We are dealing with two reports here since this program has started. This is the second report. And we have no idea whether more companies applied for the deadline for the second report than applied for the deadline for the first report. Okay? So we've got no idea if there are many more companies applying. But all we know is that there's more forms coming in. Now, if we have a look somewhere here which just says 133 companies submitted claims for the second time, and then 41 for the third time. I didn't understand what the second and the third time was. I would have expected the first and the second time. But why? This is the second report. It's been going for 6 years. 4.5 years, okay. So I'm trying to actually get a handle on what has happened in the time frames of the two reports. You know, obviously there are multiple years per report. I understand that. But then you get that the form, that 412 forms were received from companies, but yet 133 companies submitted for the second time and 41 for the third time. We don't know how many applied for the first time. So in total, how many different companies, the names of the companies, have actually participated in this program? Is it, you know, are these 133, is there one company's name there three times? And is there another one, so I'm actually trying to figure out how many companies have actually taken advantage of this. Is it 25 companies? Okay, so that's first of all what I battle to understand here as to, you know, the number of forms and are the forms annual, are the forms quarterly? You know, so there really is no clarity to me on how many companies are participating in this. You know, how many unique, you know, not those that keep on applying. I just really didn't understand all of that. Was my main problem with that. Then also the cumbersomeness of the forms. One of the reasons given was why the SMEs didn't participate was that it was just far too time consuming to fill in the forms. Now, I don't know if you're going to do a special form for the SMEs to get them, encourage them to come in, or is this part of your support program? Sorry, and then there was another one. Oh yes, because one thing that if there is a problem with the SMEs taking part, your figures here show that there's this huge gap in the middle, because we've got 38.6% of the take-up is from companies of 100 million and over. And then the next biggest sector is the small companies. So obviously something sparked them. Obviously these are guys that are wanting to get their grand ideas to market quickly, so obviously trying to, you know, get whatever incentives they can. But then there's sort of drag in the middle. Is there any reason why the sort of, you know, the sort of growing companies haven't taken it up quite so soon? So those basically are mine.
Okay, I'll allow the little response from the department.
Thank you. Questions are very useful. The form, the phrase forms versus applications, it's also a difficult language. We accept it. In the future, I think we will be using applications. That is, if the amendments that we are asking for will be granted. That would be because in the current system, how it works is that companies, after they have spent on R&D for the year, tax year in which they are submitting their tax assessment to SARS, they claim for the tax deduction of R&D to SARS, but on the other side, they send their tax deduction, their claim to SARS in the normal way that they do their tax assessment. Then they submit a form to DST reporting about their R&D activities for which they have claimed. That's where the word forms comes in, and it's a very complex one too. It's also difficult for us. So that's where that's how it's used here.
So in short, it's not an application for education form in the literal sense as we know it. So I think the terminology should be retained there.
The application is
to claim to SARS. The one that goes to DST, yes. That then attempts to answer the question on the other claims done quarterly. No, they are done annually. They do this when they do their tax returns, and then they send forms to DST. But then again, one company can, like the regular R&D performers who do R&D every year, they can claim these deductions all for each of the years in which they spent on R&D. So you would have repeat applicants in a way, and that's where this table comes from, where we try to track that of the total number of 412 companies, there were some that submitted twice, some have submitted three times. So that gives you a very good idea of how many companies are there in the system. In terms of the requirement, I think we share this view with the committee. The one we say we're concerned about the efficacy of the incentives. That's why we've set up a monitoring mechanisms, and we're trying to give it more attention. I think the feedback that we, question that we get from here will also sharpen the way we think about monitoring and tracking performance or impact of the program. The work that we are doing with SARS and the Treasury is also geared to understanding the efficacy of the the incentive as such. How do we distinguish operational cost from other costs? Part of this is sorted out through currently through the way SARS do audits, because there are very clear rules for companies reporting, for financial reporting companies, as to how to classify expenditure and things like that. And then SARS always comes and do audits on the a particular phrase that they use, where they determine that is this expenditure applicable to what you're saying, and if they find problems there, your company is in trouble, so you won't like to risk and do that. So there is that part which assures quality from the part of the companies, but then again, some companies get caught up trying to do certain things, obviously. But it's an interesting area, because that's why I said earlier on that when we visit companies, you would find that they think they do R&D of this much, but when we try to apply the criteria of what are the eligible R&D in terms of this, it becomes a different figure. Because the definition of R&D as applied, say for example, in the National Research and Development Survey, is not the same as what is used in this section of the Act, for very obvious reasons. It's not the same. The other question that you've asked, 80% of companies that of the fund of the expenditure here coming from larger companies, is the same trend we note in the National R&D Survey, that a bulk of our R&D in the business sector is undertaken by larger size companies, but there's also a very long tail. You can actually have the 80% performed by the top 20 R&D performers, and a very long tail of companies doing little bits and pieces, but which are very important in their industries, those small investments, like many companies that are small in size. So that is what we are noting here. But the concern that you're raising about the companies, the sort of companies that are in the middle, which you say they are fast-growing companies not benefiting, that's what we must target in terms of the awareness. We need to understand that better, that environment better, and interact with those companies. And I think the initiative of working with the DTI and the Technology Innovation Agency can actually help in making inroads in there. But to some extent, you would find that companies have particular needs for support, and there is, on the other side, a range of government support programs that are available, and they make choices as to what's the most appropriate they will make use. Is it a SPY, or is it a TRIP, or do they want an equipment grant, things like that. So there's all sorts of these considerations that companies would make in terms of sourcing assistance from government programs. Yeah, the 2009 figures going down, I must warn, we must not be interpret that wrongly, because like now, you would find that the figures of 2010 is lower than the one of 2009. I explained that the forms that we continue to receive, you'd find that we allocated backwards, and then 1 year back will looks like it's always the one that peaks. So that's what we are seeing in terms of the applications, because they, yeah. How active is DST in marketing? Yes, the issues that I've highlighted here are some of the initiatives that we are doing, but we are constrained also in terms of how much we can do, say, because of the budget. But we have actually done newspaper adverts in the past 2 years, quarterly. We have engaged the Trade and Investment South Africa, talking to the foreign investors. We have placed adverts on the some of the investor magazines that are put up to investors. And happy to report on the DTI website, when there is information together with the other many incentives of government, that's placed there on the R&D incentive as well. So we're trying what we can. But the response from companies depend on what do they need. So it ultimately comes to that. I don't know if there's any other question that I've left out. Deriving income, I think it merely, it's also the language that they use in the tax law. It merely means that companies would do R&D for the purpose of the company, of running a company, a business. It doesn't in any way stop a company from doing basic research, because anyway, they do basic research and discover something new that they will go commercial about. But the rules here doesn't specify if a company does that research, whether that must end up in a product that they market. If it fails, they would still benefit, because R&D in its nature is a risky undertaking, and the government comes in with this program to try and deal with the risk element and the inability of companies to raise external funding for this type of thing. And it's a safe proposition to have an incentive based on a tax deduction after the fact, but it has also other unintended limitations as regards to companies that don't have the internal cash flow to finance their R&D upfront. So it's a balance that we need to make. That's why we're considering a proposal on supporting a smaller size enterprises as such. Thanks, Imran. You want to add?
Just just to add, and Godfrey is the professional, but I think the idea around the number of companies versus the number of forms is something we would address in the future, because it's something you want to know about. But just by looking at the numbers and deducting, because if someone has applied a second time, then you minus that number from the number that applied. So, for example, if four have repeated, 2006, four people applied, in 2007, the same four applied, plus 124 more. Now, using that kind of basis of... Well, if you look at this table combined with... you look at table one combined with table three, you can figure it out. Although, as you speak, I think it would help us to do a specific table that demonstrates this in a slightly different way, because we only have two series of results. It made it difficult. But if you look at table one, it says four forms were received. So you would assume each company applied with one form or submitted one form to us. In 2007, we received 127 forms, but out of those 127 forms, four were a second time claimant. If you look at table three, therefore, the net number of new forms by new companies is 127 minus 4. If you then apply that consistently, the numbers I get was that you get four people applying in 2004 for companies, but this is just a proxy measure we'd need to see. 2007, 123, 2008, 63, and 2009, 48 new companies. Then you have to add this with the existing claimants to get the total number. Yeah, but then you have to use the third claimants. So we can do something like it because it would be useful for our own analysis. But we can't... Yes. Yeah. But as Godfrey indicated, you can't say that with certainty at this point in time. You're just using the numbers as a basis, because the register is not per company. So that was the first comment to make. The second one around mathematical sciences... again, it's not something I can say with certainty, but we would investigate. It was something that struck me. It's computer science.
Computer science.
Because you see the category, there is no computer science category, and there's computer science embedded in everything else. Geology nowadays, most things are done on a computer. It's modeled before you do things. So it's computer science.
I think there's an omission. There is a table that guides us in classifying this, so could have included it as an omission, and we must apologize for that. There is explanation that's very clear on how that works.
there's a statement somewhere, I just can't see where it is now, to the effect that we spend 0.19% of GDP on the incentive, or at least on the tax foregone, I suppose, and compared to 0.05 elsewhere, etc. Tell me, What we're doing now is saying there isn't sufficient take-up. Right? We want actually to forego more tax, effectively, because the more tax you forego, the more successful the program is. My question would be, what is the limit? Has Treasury actually said, just go for it as much as you like, and if too many people take it up, then we'll put a limit on it, but at the moment it's unlimited, or is there actually a limit?
I think also you must say, send us the concrete information about mathematical and physical sciences, what exactly it entails. Because, you see, in this kind of business, you can't depend on a hearsay. We need to see it in writing what exactly it means. Because the purpose of the committee is to guide and make an input which is constructive also for the works of the department, if at all there is any area of shortcoming.
I just forgot to notice my notes. You make reference to the number of inquiries. Inquiries have increased substantially. Do you tend to find what is the correlation between number of inquiries and number of applications? Is there fairly close correspondence between the two, or do you end up having to turn a lot of people away as a result of the inquiries being down a cul-de-sac?
Thank you. Yes, the limit has not been established with Treasury at the moment, maybe that's a good thing. the number of inquiries we know this. I raise a concern with the team there, that we know this anecdotally. We knew this anecdotally at the time we wrote the report, that there is a lot more inquiries that are coming, and the team was actually battling to handle at the time. So we knew that, but I said to the team, we need to have a very good record of how, whether we're meeting one person many times or are we meeting a new company every time, so that we have a good record of these interactions. It's just that this information has not been well captured from the beginning, but we know from the level of activity that we're involved with that there was actually a increase in the inquiry. There is a system that has been set up to try and capture this, going forward. So I'm sure in the future we'll be able to share that kind of experiences to what are the companies, because what we wanted to capture is what kind of companies are we interacting with, and what's the nature of the issues that they bring up, and do these companies end up applying to the program, or do they go away? So such kind of issues as to, or whether we are dealing with one company many times without resolving the issue that they're bringing up. So we don't have good system. We acknowledge it's a weakness. I think we will provide a table that explains the categories of field of sciences to make that part clear. We apologize once more for the omission.
So I think at that juncture, we have come to the end of this session. I hope that members are satisfied with the responses that you have given. But otherwise, let me thank the DG for having been able to come and present a very, very good report. What my only question is, what has happened to this? Because I've never seen a report of this nature. It's the first time to see it. Well, in the other years, what? This is the second one. Oh, okay. Oh. Oh, so it's not an annual report. Not yet. Okay. Yeah, because.
Chairperson, from this one, we are able now to produce annually. There's 2010-11 that's coming. Ideally, we would have liked to be talking about 2010-11 now. We're still doing a little bit of homework on this in the department, but we are able to produce this annually now.
Because they do it annually, of course, and applications are made only in subsequent tax years. Or financial years, whatever annual report you get is always going to be wrong. So in a sense, it's a futile, yeah, I don't know if it's futile, but as long as people are aware that the future reports will be updating the current one every time, that would be a limitation.
Yeah, so it's fine. We'll grapple with it until it's fine. As long as we have the information of what is happening. I think otherwise, thank you very much for coming. We've got a number of other tasks awaiting us now. We have people that we have upheld up outside here. Were you not supposed to be here even after lunch? I think they are wrong. Maybe they are going to the other one. Okay, thanks. The meeting is adjourned. We will meet next week. So, so I'm reminding you all of the test team. Yeah.
On the schedule for next week, Wednesday's committee meeting.
What?
Yes.
Not the plenary.
When
is the plenary? I thought plenary started next week.
There's a committee meeting.
Yeah, yeah. We have a committee meeting. So after the committee meeting?
No, but the international is on the agenda for the committee meeting. The committee meeting is at the KMU, the B2R, and the
third. Okay, well, next week.